Blog Talk Radio.
You sure do got a pretty mouth. Why don't you drop them panties?
Saturday afternoon, September 15th. Welcome to another edition of Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house today. 2 hours of soul power as we try to stir the pot, provide some food for thought for everybody out there, and just give you another reason to, like, ask those basic questions of who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how. Soul Tree Radio in a Raw, sponsored to you by the Black Athlete Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, our friends at Guardian Caps, Leonard Hansen and Mike Feely, our friends at 1450 WCLM Richmond, the soul of Richmond, Virginia, Cowboy Reggie and crew, our friends at WUFO, 1080 AM in Buffalo, New York, the mighty Oba, Pat Freeman and company. We'll speak about their efforts to get a stadium in downtown Buffalo briefly today as well. And you guys, I'll keep bringing up you guys, and in a couple weeks I'll explain further why I keep saying that you guys are going to be involved in all of this. Now, right off the bat, we've got an interesting menu, but I'm going to start off with something differently. We're going to talk about the fallout from everything that's happening abroad and how four real heroes come home while a couple of chicken hawks keep squawking. And we're going to talk a little football and some hockey, but this has more to do with union busting, and you guys know where we go sometimes with this, and also the DNC versus RNC and how that all peeled out. Mr. Biggs, Gary Norris Gray, is going to give us an update. He's out there trying to make some money up there in Northern California. He is strictly on the hustle in a good way, and what that term or that word means. But we want to start off with something different, because this was brought to me by my friend and colleague Bobby Booker, who's on the line now. Bobby, how you doing, darling?
Hey, you know, I can't complain. It's a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I know you guys, some of you may be used to listening to Bobby every night on our Wednesday night hump day special, but Bobby threw something to my attention that really kicked in the memory banks, and this deserves being put out front. And we'll start off by saying we know that for decades Hollywood has always decided what their idea, what their version of what black people do, how they're perceived. Those images have always been powerful, whether it was Hattie McDaniel playing Mammy or Sidney Poitier, you know, being the good black man and all those other things, right up to Denzel Washington being turned down for the Oscar for X, but yet gets to play a rogue cop in Training Day and gets his Oscar. Well, here's another one of these issues of casting gone wrong. Apparently, and Bobby, you know more about this than I do because you passed it on to me, Zoe Saldana, the actress who I remember being in the movie The Losers, is an action flick, but Zoe Saldana, who is an actress and a good-looking sister, is supposedly being slated to play the role of Nina Simone in her biopic. And Bobby, please pick it up from there, if you will.
Well, you know, there's been some controversy. A New York Times article helped highlight it just a couple, 3 days ago, about the stir that's been created over the selection of Zoe to play Nina Simone. And the whole thing is no one is really complaining about Zoe's as an actress.
Right.
She's excellent. She does play some very interesting and intriguing parts.
Mm-hmm.
But what has really gotten the attention is to cast her as Nina Simone, particularly because of the physical forbearance.
Exactly.
That neither one of them really share. Now, you know, there could be a whole lot of changes. You know, we could attach noses and fatten up lips and darken skin and change hair. But one of the things that has caused confusion about this casting is the attempted change or Hollywoodization of the Nina Simone story, because Nina Simone, while she was known as an activist and more importantly as a musician and a phenomenal singer and gifted artist all around, she was decidedly a black woman.
That's
she
indeed.
Had, or as the term of the day was, a Negro woman. She
That's
had
right.
very a broad nose, mm-hmm. a wide forehead, and extraordinarily large lips.
Mm-hmm.
She looked and wore her hair in natural hairstyles, an afro, showcasing her kinky hair.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe is, let's just say, the polar opposite of all of that. She has what would be considered a favorable European type of features, which far
thinner, saying it.
Mm-hmm. a thinner nose,
yep.
and more of a classic European tanned beauty, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with all of this, and also far lighter skin,
yes.
than a Nina Simone.
Mm-hmm.
But what is troubling about all of this is the attempt to dampen the things that made Nina Nina.
Thank
Nina
you.
Was very proud, Negro, Black.
Mm-hmm.
African American, pan Africanness, and I mean, she was all of that, and always, let's just say, like Michelle Obama shows off her arms, her guns,
mm-hmm.
well, Nina showed off, always showcased her Blackness.
Yes, she did.
And the casting of this young lady has, as the Times article pointed out, reignited the conversation of
mm-hmm.
colorism, which
yes.
was Alice Walker's term for the discrimination of folks based on the graduations of skin color.
Mm-hmm.
Or we say as kids, you know, if you white, y'all right. If you yellow, you mellow.
Mm-hmm.
Black, stay
get back.
You know, so... You know, this again has become a conversation in post-racial America, because post-racial America has yet to move on past things that really strike at its psychosis when it comes to race and color,
mm-hmm.
really, in this country.
You know, it's interesting that you brought this into the mix, because I had this conversation on my Soul Tree show when I lived in Vancouver, Canada, and it had to do with Whoopi Goldberg buying the rights to the Celia Cruz story, which throws another dynamic into this thing here. We don't know if Zoe can sing, you know, and I'm not saying that she can't, but, you know, singing was very much a part of Nina, too, in addition to everything else. And if you're going to talk about her playing the role and having to sing too. Well, when this dialogue first started, the first person that came to my mind was Rachel Farrell, who many don't know, but Rachel Farrell's an awesome voice, great singer. She sings more primarily jazz, but she is an awesome performer. And she too presents her image in the same way that Nina does. But one of our friends and colleagues, Beryl, she threw Macy Gray into the mix, and I remember Macy doing an awesome job when she acted in a role, and I'm thinking, you know what? That's even better. Here's two beautiful Black women right out of Central Casting who you don't have to do much of anything for to simulate not just Nina's visage, but her presence, what she gives off as well. But yet, they go far afield with Zaldana, and everything that you say to the looks, appearance, image thing, yeah, it doesn't compute. But Macy, I mean, even Mary J, Mary J, maybe she was on another assignment or maybe she's got something else in the mix, but how could they turn down Macy Gray when they've already seen Macy do her thing?
I mean, you know, Zoe is also, and we can't be absent of the bottom line here, which is
no.
money. And mm-hmm. Zoe has been involved in God knows how many blockbusters, and most especially in the blockbuster that probably made her look more like a Nina Simone than she would naturally, which was
mm-hmm.
the the sci-fi flick. What was that? I'm having a
not
brain
the losers. That was the action flick when I first saw her. But yeah, I know where you're going. Yes.
Yeah. So you know, no, not the losers. Avatar.
No, I know that. Yeah, no, I said losers.
Yeah,
losers
yeah.
was the first one where I saw her. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh no, but I'm saying though she's obviously you know she's tied into. Into some serious moneymakers, and right now she is the hot brown woman of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no question about that, but it's still, again, is troubling because this whitening of an acknowledged and very proud black woman.
Yes.
Via this medium, which is global, no matter how you slice it, you know someone's going to be selling the DVD on a corner somewhere.
That's right.
In some part, in every part of this world, someone's going to be hustling that DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that message. When we have a problem, not so much here in the States, but when you leave and you go across the diaspora, when you go to the Caribbeans, when you go to Africa, and you see black and brown women, black and brown men who are using the bleaching chemicals and creams to try and change. But really, in the end, it distorts their features.
It does.
You know, when you have these attempts, because of the mindset that has been twisted by these images, and that's why we have to stand up and have a voice about this, because the image of a Nina Simone with her features gave strength and power and spoke the truth to a reality of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people globally. At a time, and when we look at the time period that she came along, which was during the whole nascent civil rights movement, in its own kind of way, becoming a spokesperson and advocate, even though she was doing that, but becoming a spokesperson and advocate by the fault of her presence, of her presentation, by the types of songs that she was singing, and by the power that she always was bringing via her music and her lyrics. You know, you cannot walk away from what backbone,
exactly,
what fortitude that gave to a community of people, as well as the level of education her presence provided to those who thought less of folk who look like her.
Most definitely. I think that's an excellent point. And even the way that she presented herself on stage, Nina Simone was touted just as Aretha Franklin was the queen of soul. Nina Simone was the high priestess of soul. You know, I've seen her in concert at least four times growing up, and it never failed to strike that beautiful African face when she plays those pianos and sings about things that mattered. In the same style of all troubadours, she would address an issue and made sure that her voice was strong on it, and she didn't vacillate regarding things. When she sings Mississippi Goddamn, I always crack up because I've seen it live, and when she says, and I mean every word.
That's right.
You know exactly where she's coming from with this. And I'm trying to imagine Zoe Saldana singing this and coming off with that same power with regard to the image, and it just doesn't compute. And again, I am not kicking Ms. Saldana to the curb. I respect sis for her gifts and all that. But Macy Gray provides a fantastic image, and she has a presence to her,
and
she would be comfortable. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Because she would be. She's already comfortable enough in her own skin, where she ain't got to go through all this other histrionics and whatnot, and changing shit to fit a role. There's no role that's necessary to change. It's already there. And I would say the same thing with Rachel Farrell. But having said these things, you know, when they see what Macy Gray has already done and they would turn it down, this goes to the real issue that we can't have black images, be they male or female, come off as positive. Now, my friend and colleague, Tony McClain, we've had conversations regarding this briefly on other things that seem to revolve around this same issue. There's a new animated show on TV called Black Dynamite. And Black Dynamite, I think it's from the same people who did the Boondocks. But the point is, it's a takeoff on all the black action films embodied in this character, Black Dynamite. He's got the big dick and does all the same kind of swagging and strutting and all the other shit that was eminent of the black action films. I refuse to call them blaxploitation because they didn't exploit shit. Then Bruce Willis and Arnold Schwarzenegger have to be white exploitation or whatever it is, for lack of a way of putting it different. The bottom line was, though, the images of people like Pam Grier and Tamara Dobson and Gloria Henley and all these other women and men was, well, you know, yeah, they look good and they're providing something positive, but, you know, it's fantasy, guys. You know, it's exploitation. You don't really think black people are going to beat the bad white guys and rule the world or win the day and, you know, be the good guys. We're not perceived that way. So y'all need to know right now, y'all can ignore this. So get your jollies off when Pam Grier cuts off the bad guy's nuts and all that, because that shit doesn't happen in real life if you're black. If you're Lorena Bobbitt, it might, but no, not if you're black. So now, when you have this translation of all this crap, the bottom line comes down to Hollywood's going to tell you what the image will be. And I don't want Hollywood dictating shit to me, because they still got a lot of explaining to do over how Cleopatra could look like Claudette Colbert or Elizabeth Taylor. or supposedly Angelina Jolie, if she's been slated to play this role, but I digress. You know, Nina Simone didn't have to have collagen pumped in her lips. She was just fine as she was. And she wore braids before Bo Derek had to wear them to perceive some sort of image of beauty or being exotic in 10. This comes down to there's nothing wrong with what's already there. You don't fit it to script it, then something is wrong with you. And we've always said on this show and on other shows, telling your own story is important, because unless the lions get to eat every motherfucker involved, the story of the hunt will always be told by the hunter. And this, to a degree, is another aspect of this being thrown in our faces, because whatever Zoe Saldana brings to the screen, if and when they do this, it will never be as powerful as if Macy or Rachel or someone who really actually looks like Nina gets to do this. And as I say this, I want to flip back to where I started with the Celia Patti LaBelle thing. We talked on this briefly on the phone. If you look at Celia Cruz, La Reina, the Queen of Salsa, and Patti LaBelle, this is a classic case of how families were separated and generations of slavery have manifested themselves. Patti and Celia are definitely from the same tribe. Ain't no doubt about it. If you look at their faces, you know that they are sisters. And I don't mean just sisters from the sense of being black women. They're sisters in terms of family. This is true, right? Separated at birth type stuff. And for all those listening out there and under the tree here, you know, do yourself a favor. Google the images of Patti LaBelle and of Celia Cruz. You'll see what I'm talking about. And all of that's right there in front of them. But when Whoopi bought the rights, a lot of Latinos were upset that, you know, what are you doing? You know, we need a Latina to play La Reina. And with the conflict is the obvious thing that's missing here. You know, all those of the diaspora, all those separated tribal people, here are two members of the same tribe. They're staring at you face to face. I have a video of the two of them performing at the Latin Awards, and again, it looked just like two sisters had come home to kick it with each other. That's the type of image that needs to be put out there. Whatever they want to say about Nina Simone, it can never be said as powerfully if you don't have somebody who can reflect that true image of her. But Hollywood has a problem with that, and they get scared at the notion that how can we have a black man or a black woman perceived a certain way? The Denzel Malcolm X thing was a classic example of that. I couldn't think of any one time when anyone encapsulated a character that was black and male and as powerful as Malcolm, as Brother Malcolm, as the way Denzel did it. And everybody knew Denzel got fucked over for that. But to have him play a rogue cop, so he's not even a law-abiding cop, so he doesn't represent the good guy. He's this anti-hero. That's their phrase for it. But the real is, see, even when we give Negroes something like that, you can't expect them to be law-abiding. They'll do the dirt, and they'll get away with shit, and this is what you want to see. We want this emblazoned in your minds. This is how they are. And we'll tell you how much they are, and you'll be stupid enough to pay $12 to see it and reinforce it. This is more than just roles we're talking about when we step to Hollywood. And again, I ain't going to ever complain about Denzel or Zoe or anybody making their paper. But people need to think, because in terms of images, there's some sinister shit going on underneath all of this. And if you're not going to look up and see it, then go ahead, give your money to it. But what you're looking at is not what you should be looking at. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bobby. I didn't mean to.
Well, you know, one of the things you bring to the forefront, I mean, my biggest problem with Malcolm X was really knowing what Malcolm, again, just like people know what Nina Simone looked like, I, too, was troubled in trying to envision Denzel Washington. And you have to realize with acting, with the arts, there has to be a suspension of reality
exactly.
to absorb that bend of light, that whole presentation, and also be able to hear, feel, and possibly experience the story that's being told. So it has to be deeper than the surface.
Exactly.
And with that in mind, I embraced Malcolm X and had to keep employing a lot of other things when it came to Denzel Washington. I dig the brother. I love the brother. I know the brother comes righteous and represents us on so many fronts. But, you know, I still had to keep that going to see him as Malcolm. And that just brings me around to a conversation that I actually heard a little earlier today on terrestrial radio. And it was the director of a Spanish animated feature-length film that's called Chico and Rita.
Right.
And this is a film that, you know, was nominated for Best Animated Film at the Oscars and won a Spanish award for Best Animation. But what the point that the director was making was how hard it was for him to see actors telling these stories. One of the reasons why he went, and this is a story about a couple that's brought together by music out of pre-revolutionary Cuba and their journey and their love affair. But his point was that because you have to suspend so much of that belief in what you're seeing, it's hard for you to get into the story. And when it's animation, all of that is gone. You have now absorbed and embraced what you're being told, and you can now but you can experience this story without that other filter that's going, I don't know. She don't really look like,
there you go, exactly.
You know, and that is very important. And I was really intrigued by his observation, because I found that to be so true in a lot of things. And I actually, earlier today, before this even came up on our radar, I was thinking about movies that could have been so better told if indeed they could have been animated. Now, things have changed, and cost differences are a whole different thing. I mean, you could get a 9-year-old to almost animate a feature-length movie. You could do it if you get the right software and sit at home. I mean, it's not it takes a bit of time and effort, but it's a doable thing. But it does give us another option. And as we speak and encourage people to continue to carry the light of our story forward, we have to fan the flames for other options.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, because I am ecstatic to know that Nina Simone's story is going to be told. I mean, it's almost toe-curlingly great to know
that
her story, I don't know much, but when's the last time you heard of the Martin Luther the King film that went global? Okay?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously.
That's right.
There are a lot of stories that from us that will never be told. The aforementioned Malcolm X, that was one of those films that was told. If we look at one of my favorite movies from Clint Eastwood, and I won't be saying that too much longer ever.
You read my mind.
but still. One of my favorite movies was, oh, goodness, A Bird.
Yeah.
I mean, hands down. I was just like, you know.
And he did an excellent job.
I will not disparage
But see, again, love or hate Clint, the empty chair notwithstanding, that was spurred. That was spurred by his own love of jazz.
Exactly.
And if you remember, when he played a DJ in Play Misty for Me, that's when everybody got the first vestiges that Clint actually had some musical knowledge regarding same. And he actually played in a couple of jazz festivals, you know, as a sideman.
He's got skills, too.
See, he's got chops. He can play. But the point is that he said, you know, Coltrane's story is worth telling.
Right.
And the right person had to be there. And because he was Forest Whitaker was perfect for it in terms of casting.
Forest
you know?
Whitaker was wonderfully perfect for that.
And,
know, because there were a lot of people, first of all, there are a lot of people who had no real image of Coltrane.
Exactly.
Coltrane was, you knew his music. I'm not saying, I mean, honestly, you could throw a picture of Coltrane up, and there are plenty of people who wouldn't know who he was. Serious.
That's right.
Even now.
That's
I mean,
right.
Just, even then and now, he was. But Nina, on the other hand, Nina had a whole different presence.
That's
and,
exactly right.
And attitude, and it was, it you had to deal with what you were looking at.
That's
you
right.
Had, and you know, Coltrane sort of had the option of hiding behind his images. Nina. Yeah, she had chops, but she, and she brought it to you, but you had to look at her.
You had to
deal with her. You couldn't
exactly
run away
right.
from that. And that is what makes this an issue, you know, because if you look at central casting, there's something a little askew here because, you know, we're not dealing with that portion of the story, which to me, and I've mentioned it to you before, we're not, this isn't This isn't the 25% or 50%. This is actually 85% of the story. You've got to deal with what Nina looks like and what she represents.
Most
and
definitely.
If you don't deal with that, then you're really not telling her story.
No, and the story is dead before it even gets off the storyboard. That's truth. And I don't know where they'll go with this. I'm sure Zaldana will bring some people in if they complete this project. But to know what else they could have done, and our guest Fred Witted is on the line. Fred, stay put, Fred. When we come back, I wanna finish this because I want your take on it, Fred, before we start talking football. Because as someone who's an archivist like you are, I want your take on what the image of Nina Simone as a performer, as an activist, and seeing her face superimposed with a Zoe Saldana, the two of them together to suit Hollywood is dehumanizing, in my opinion. And I don't want to see why Nina can't be human enough looking as close to what she looks like as possible. Because if Hollywood can make a white man into a black man to do black like me, if Hollywood can have people up in arms when in the movie Sayonara, the Japanese actress is feeling shameful because she wants to have her eyes slit and opened up so that she'll look like a so-called Western beauty to please her husband, then you know the amount of damage Hollywood can do in presenting their images disguised in the realm of entertainment. We'll be back in just a few secs and take some pause for the cause. Think about that. Sultry Radio in the Raw.
The Gray Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Yes, indeed. Lend your ears. Saturdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. on the West Coast. Gary Norris Gray and the Cove Caravan followers with the Grey Leopard Cove. Gary is on assignment this Saturday because he is up there. For those that don't know, he is a very adept bowler. Gary is an ass-kicking bowler, and his bowling team is trying to make some cash. He needs to get to 20th place or better to get into the money, and he's 32nd right now, so Gary is seriously on the hustle. We're going to root on him and his compadres there. Go in there and make that money, because we'll hear from Mr. Biggs possibly later on in the show, but right now, a strong brother. He is the author of, and I hope I say this right, Fred, the Black College Football Sports Encyclopedia. And that is Fred Whitted, a proud alum of Winston-Salem State University. Fred, thank you for taking the time to talk to us again on Soul Tree Radio in the Raw.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's actually the just this Black College Sports Encyclopedia, which covers all sports, and we've actually produced one already for Winston-Salem State's. It's called the Rams House, but mm-hmm. we actually produced an edition for them for their national championship last year, and we were working on one for Shaw University because their women won their first ever national championship. So that's in the works. Plus, we're updating the actual sports encyclopedia. That's what I was doing about 20 minutes ago.
Okay.
And I made it to the library parking lot, and you can hear somebody with a loud truck motor right next to me, and hopefully the train doesn't go by. But,
welcome to
and the last
radio.
Time I checked, the Rams were beating the young man from down at Morehouse, 28-7. I don't know what the score is now, but hopefully it's gotten better than that. I got 45-7. Go Rams, but anyway, that's my promo.
Well, since the Rams have seemed to have taken care of business for the time being, I don't know how much you heard, but I would like your take on this because you as an archivist, and understanding telling our own stories is something that is already deeply ingrained in you. And this started off our show where Zoe Saldana, the actress, is being touted to play the role of Nina Simone. Now, again, I don't know if Zoe can sing. I know she can act, you know, and it's not an issue about whether she can act or not or anything like that, but Zoe does not look like Nina. That's straight up. And to add to the point, there are singers who do look like Nina, and we already know one, Macy Gray, who we know can act, and another one, Rachel Farrell, who has probably one of the best voices this side of Chaka Khan, but nobody, very few people, unless they're into jazz, they don't know about Rachel. But to that point, that Nina never hid her image and was always proud of her image is going to get sidetracked with what Zoe Saldana will bring to the screen in trying to present herself as a Nina Simone look-alike, feel-alike, what have you. And I'd just like your take on that, if you would.
Well, this is just another in a long line of
I like what you said, long.
We have to tell our own story. In today's environment, I understand what Hollywood is all about. I know all this other stuff, but at the same time, we have far more control today than we've ever had. You know, I do the sports encyclopedia, and I've had several, quote, publishers tell me how I should do it so it's more marketable than all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I understand where they're coming from. But that's not where HBCU Sports is. That's not what HBCU Sports is about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to get in there and you got to tell, you know, we got to get in there and tell our own story. We have enough people. Now, I've said this before. Until we can get people like Oprah and Spike and
yep.
Bill and whoever else you want to name who got all this money to get in there and tell our story, you know, that would be like having Halle Berry playing the Oprah story. You know, sometimes you got to get real.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I'm kind of hyped now because I just watched Hidden Colors a couple nights ago.
Yes.
And, you know, that was just another case of some more stuff hitting the fan. Because, you know, there's one guy said, well, you know, I was telling him about all the stuff he knew. that he didn't know that he saw. And then I said, well, I didn't see a whole lot I didn't know. The problem was I saw a lot of things in there that I haven't done anything about. But at least I will admit to being in the process of correcting some of that with the work I've done. Because, see, you know, one of the things, among the things that people have tried to tell me that I need to change about the Sports Encyclopedia and other writings I've done, to include when I did a book on blacks in federal.
Right.
Okay, I get people asking, why isn't this person in there, or why is this person in there, you know, well, they don't know what they did. And I did a segment on couples who've been together for 50 or more years. Well, they haven't done anything. I say, you're missing the point. They say our families don't stay together.
Thank you.
Here is 105, including three in my own family, who have been married 50 or more years.
Mm-hmm.
One couple had made it to their 80. They had just celebrated their 82nd anniversary when she passed away, and he passed away a few months later. I have, I think, several in the book who were 60 or more years along. A couple of those were actually 70 or more.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, that's not significant. Hold up, you're missing the point. They say we don't stay together. Here
that's
are
right.
100-plus examples of men and women who stay together for 50 or more years. and having observed my sisters and brothers, I know my sister and my two brothers, you know, I know that's not easy, but they stay.
That's right.
And I was still, you know, it just started out. It didn't start out of me trying to tell a story about my family per se, but I showed an example in one family, and although now I'll admit I missed the boat on it because I lasted 16 years, and you know my brothers and sisters me like, what's your problem? And I understand where they're coming from.
Yep,
but see,
right.
To you know how much long, you know, how do the preachers put it? How long, oh Lord, how long?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well,
look at how you were able to do this radio show, which is totally different from the norm, although it's the same, you know, pans out the same. But, you know, you remember how you used to have to go to the radio station, all those other
kind
of things?
Mm-hmm.
Look how this is being done. You know,
yeah.
I do put my books together on a laptop. Used to have to have, you know, I mean, I used to use typesetters. It was the last time I paid for typesetting. I think it cost me like 60, 65 bucks an hour. And I look at now. I pay myself a whole lot less to do it, and I do just as good a job as they do. And then I know what I'm doing as I'm doing because, you know, there were times where we'd have to pay them to go back and make corrections.
Mm-hmm.
I do that on the fly now. I put the pictures in and all that kind of, and it's just that easy. So the whole thing about Nina Simone being played by somebody, you know, that's pleasing to the eye, come on. The lady was fine.
That's right.
You know,
she was pleasing to my eyes. It's like,
you know, and I think she's deceased now, but, you know, would you do the same thing to Millie Jackson and risk getting cussed out to your face?
That's right.
And see, this is the kind of thing, I don't see that much difference between the way one looked and the other one looked. I mean, they're both beautiful women.
Yep.
You know, I forget the model's name, but she's an African, and there is no doubt that this woman is African, tall, black, and bald-headed.
There you go.
Okay, she can sell clothes. Why? Because she has the look. Okay, some people don't like that look. Okay, let them get used to it. Because so many, you know, we got to stop letting people tell us what's good and bad about us.
That's right.
Because as long as we do, you know, because I was asked, why did you do a book on Winston? So I was like, because I've read so much crap about UNC, Duke, and all these other schools, and granted, they're quality. But I think Winston-Salem State is just as good, especially to me, because that's what's on my diploma.
Exactly.
And besides that, look at the stories. You know, a lot of those guys who are at those predominantly white schools back in the day that were so good, okay, where did they go when the Earl Monroes of the HBCUs ended up going over to the white school? You know, i.e., Gene Worthy's dad went to North Carolina Central. He went to UNC.
Exactly.
Okay, where's the white guy who was playing at Carolina when James's father was at UNC Central? And then what happened to his son when Gene Worthy came along? He didn't come to he didn't come to Central, but mm-hmm. Worthy, Jeans went over to Carolina.
Yep.
You know, 1977. You got 12, I think it was 12 people on the All-ACC team, one white.
Yep.
1967, 12 people on the All-ACC team, one black.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where did they go? That tells you the quality was at the HBCUs. And you don't want to hear about it now because, well, quote, they were NAIA. Well, until 1958, the NCAA didn't even admit black people exist and didn't want them in didn't want them because they had so many white schools from the South
mm-hmm.
that didn't want to play black schools.
Yes.
So, you know, that's what we had to deal with. And so I wish, you know, we need more Tyler Perrys out there.
Yeah, we do.
You know, I don't, you know, I watch Tyler's material, and I actually buy it because I know what it's like to have people bootleg your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we need more Tyler Perrys out there, and it can be done. Because, you know, remember, he started working outside of Hollywood.
Yeah, he
and
did.
And he still has to fight him some, but at the same time, he showed that you can win against them, against whatever odds that, you know, that they present to you. So, I mean, my thing is get out there and get it done. That's what I do in the publishing, on the publishing side. You're doing it, T-Mac and the other guys are doing it on the radio side. So, hey,
mm-hmm.
we are all examples of what can be done if you go out there. Well, it's hard, okay? So what?
Exactly.
What did Martin Luther King tell us? Nobody's going to give up power without a fight. So
that's
you just got to fight them.
That's true.
And that's
you know,
what they teach Rams how to do. You know, we're told to win. So we go out and do that.
I have to come back to this because you really hit on something.
I'll let you talk some.
No, it's all right. You was doing just fine. But you hit on something that really struck the chord, and it was like, okay, you've got others telling you how to put your book together. And I remember when Black Magic came out and all the fanfare and whatnot, talking about finally telling truths and all of this about what really went down with the contributions of people like McClendon and Big House Moreau, etc. But even after it came out, the executive producer, you know, we actually had him on another show. I believe it was The Pad, where I said, look, you presented all the information out there. Why aren't these same bubbleheads from the mouse, ESPN, and everywhere else acknowledging? Why didn't they just say, I mean, you put it on your damn station, and you can't tell me with a straight face that, oh, no, Dean Smith didn't invent the four corners. No, McClendon did that. You would make a documentary movie, but yet you would not go the extra step to confirm that McClendon should be more than just a so-called contributor to basketball, that he was the true innovator that he really was, and that Dean Smith needs to break him off a little some and apologize for stealing the concept and having the nerve to let everybody believe that him, Dick Vitale, and all these other jerk-offs actually created this nonsense when he knows damn well he didn't. This is the classic case of, hey, boy, show me how you do that little thing there. And then somebody goes off and says, oh, yeah, well, you know, I did this on my own. I learned how to do this. I taught myself how to do this, and I didn't give credit to the person who was the originator here. So in that spirit, the book itself makes me feel like here we go again with this. Well, would I buy this book? And I can see some black people saying, well, you know, it can't be as good as the white book because, you know, black folks, they're not detail-oriented like that. And, you know, they're not meticulous enough to go through all of this and dig all of this up. And, you know, and even if they do, some will say, well, yeah, you know, it's all well and good, but, you know, the other baseball encyclopedia, now that's a real, you know, that's real book. You know, do you understand what I mean when I'm saying these things?
Probably better than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been there. I'll be the last one to defend Dean Smith on a lot of areas, but Dean Smith has never gone to the extent he should have to say, I didn't invented. But he will acknowledge that he didn't, because, but it was Al McGuire is the one who really started the movement.
That's
and then buttholes like Dick Vitale, you know, whose only contribution to college basketball is Dipsy Doo Dunkaroo and a lot of loudness. You know, to show how good he is as far as writing and presenting historical facts. I refuse. He did a book a few years ago,
right?
And his whole thing about Big House Gaines was Big House's grandson does a great imitation of me. He doesn't mention that Big House was the first black man to win 800 games. He doesn't mention he had 800 games before Dean Smith. Whole lot of stuff he don't mention. He don't mention he's in the Hall of Fame, just like Dean Smith. He has a national championship, just like Dean Smith. Don't mention none of that. So, I had checked the book out. I had to, you know how you're doing research. You got books spread out over the bed. Well, I actually threw it towards the trash can. I missed the trash can first, and I thought, well, before I have to pay for this piece of crap, I'm gonna take it back to the library next morning, which I did. But then, you know, you do have people like John Thompson.
Yes.
John Thompson didn't even bother addressing Big House along that vein, but he talked about Bobby Vaughn and a couple of other black coaches that he went to when he got his job. And he said, these guys have forgotten more about basketball than I probably will ever know.
No matter who
I go to. And see, I was there. I was at the awards banquet in '82 when House went into the Hall of Fame, and John Thompson canceled I think two events that would have paid him a whole heap of money. And John Thompson told his people, "No, Coach, they want me to speak for Coach Gaines, so that's where I'm going to be. Now, if you still keep me on a schedule where he's supposed to be, where I'm supposed to be speaking, and don't cancel it because I'm going to be in Winston-Salem, then you're going to have to go make the speech and look like me." So, and I don't think he can charge expenses, because that's what, House meant to him, you know. And by the way, you know, one of House's boys, I think, was somehow or another associated with a guy named Sleepy Floyd,
who
was a pretty good basketball player. And House, he was, because, you know, he asked House, was there any good ball players in North Carolina? He said, there's this boy down there, you know, and how the coaches talk. He said, there's this boy down there in Gastonia, pretty good. And he's under the radar, but he can play, a great shooter. That player turned out to be Sleepy Floyd, and they were talking about, well, you sneaked in to North Carolina and stole a player from under Dean Smith's nose. And, you know, Thompson replied, well, a black man 6'10" can't sneak nowhere. I went down and recruited him. I went down and recruited him, and, you know, the rest is history. You know, I can't remember if Sleepy Floyd and James Worthy played at the same school or played at rival schools, but I know both of them are from Gastonia. And, you know, Dean Smith wanted Worthy, so that's who he got. But, you know, all along, you know, and you know, and having, you know, I was telling a group of people the other day, and matter of fact, actually, I spoke to this group yesterday, and I was telling them, I said, you know, I've been blessed. I got to sit down and talk, and I've talked on the phone with everybody from Collie Nicholson to Coach Rob. In my old phone, I still have Coach McClendon and Coach Gaines, home phone number, along with Dr. Franklin, because they used to call him occasionally. Whatever it was I need to know, and you know he was kind of laced himself out to me, but you know, because he you know, there are a lot of people that say he were surprised and all that. You had his home number? Yeah, I did, because he gave it to me because he had a published number that nobody really answered. I think it was probably ran the alarms in the house, like my landline, but I had his personal phone number. And I said, you know, when you think about it, these people, you know, had a story to tell, and finally they did get to some measure, because, I mean, I even helped Milton Katz when he was working on Coach McClendon, because there were some things he knew, but there was a lot of things he didn't know. And, you know, and I was more than happy to do it because I wanted to see those stories told. But at the same time, you know, we, you know, why aren't we telling, you know, why aren't we writing about our heroes?
Because, exactly.
And we can't sit back and, like, the publishing is too easy now. I got about 10 books in my head to get done before I retire in 3 years. And I
know the feeling.
That's a lot. Actually, it's not, because you can do it so fast. And see, when you look at what's happening to Nina Simone, that's also the same thing that's happened to the Big Houses, the Bobby
yes.
Bonds, you know, Tricky Tom, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
All those guys' story is out there to be told, but we are not telling. You know,
exactly.
I think when I was on the other line, I was talking about, you know, people don't know that Tricky Tom Harris was responsible for the building of the Tiger Bells.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because he didn't want to do it, but it was there was a certain irony because he put Ed Temple in charge so he could focus on the men's team and got Ed Temple started, and the rest is history there, as well as the Tiger Bells history. You know, Tricky Tom died on the sideline coaching Virginia Union's women's basketball team at the CIAA
yeah.
to the CIAA tournament championship, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all that's right there, and we got to tell that kind of story. If you wait for others to tell your story, they will tell what they want and leave out what they want. And a lot of time, the kind of stuff that our kids need to know, because I'm working on something right now, and I don't know how it's going to play out or anything, but I know it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put something together that talks about the camaraderie and fellowship among the players and coaches from the old days, because if you've ever been to the CIAA tournament, you can't tell whoever was enemies at the CIAA. Because it's like old home week. You get the coaches together, and, you
mm-hmm.
know, I like to sit around and just listen to them tell the stories, and you're like, oh, that's unbelievable. You know,
yeah, that's true,
Bobby
real
Bond's
stuff.
House on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Bond stayed at Big House's house when he came to Winston-Salem. Coaches stayed together? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Their wives are best friends. You know, their wives sit together at ball games.
Yep.
Still do at times. And,
most,
you know,
definitely.
These are kinds of things that our you know, we when we look at our games and see these, you know, see fights in games and stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, that did happen among fans, but players, that was unheard of.
Yep.
Because, you know, it was just unheard of. And you think of what can be done, because see, sports and politics are two things that really mix people up. And I
yes,
think
they
it's
do.
It's a very valuable thing to our communities to get kids to start understanding. Even to, you know, when I talk to kids, you know, I ask, "Do you want to go to NFL?" Yeah. Where are you gonna play? I'm gonna play offensive line. Son, you're 6'1". You weigh 215. Have you looked at a roster? But you know, but then you say, "Well, what about going to the NFL?" And do something else. Go to the NBA, and do you realize the average kid wants to go to a team like the NBA? What you got? 15 slots.
Yep.
But you got 100 plus people on the staff.
Mm-hmm.
I know right. several of these people. So I know mm-hmm. someone that's been in the NBA 15 to 20 years, making six figures, which end up being more than the guy who got the $10 million contract.
That's right.
If you do the math.
Mm-hmm.
But see, all that's being left out. And these are the kind of piecemeal stories our kids are getting about what's available. You can only make the NBA as a player. You can only make the NFL as a player. Okay.
Most definitely.
But then what about all those other jobs that don't pay as much but pay steady?
Mm-hmm.
You can put your family on in a very good stead. They pay good retirement. You don't have to worry about your knee going out.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to worry about getting tired and don't want to run up and down the court. You know, who is it? Somebody recently, he was out of the game because he got his toe hurt. The kid that plays for Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
You know, he has a foot infection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to worry about none of that. Put your foot up on the desk and keep typing. And it's there, but we don't, you know, we get so many piecemeal stories when it comes to sports in general. You know, because the glamour is in who's on the court.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other avenues out there, and our kids don't get told. And that's why you look around and say, well, no, why didn't white guys, you know, why are so many referees white?
There you go.
Because you're told that you don't make no money.
Mm-hmm.
Fred, hold up, let's reset because I want you to continue along that course. We're at the top of the hour now, and we're transitioning into the second hour. I want you to come back and jump in on that. You're listening, and you're listening to Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. My guest, Fred Whitted. Well, now he's not a guest any longer. Now he is the author of The Black College Sports Encyclopedia. We'll be back in just a couple secs. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. Canada. And just a couple of programming notes as we carry on here. Within the next 2 weeks, we will have a musical guest come on and lay some information on about what things are doing down in a certain part of the country, which I will not yet reveal because I'm going to see if we can get some artists on here in addition to our colleague there. Also, we're going to revisit the situation involving Clarence Aaron. This is a young man who is in Alabama. He's been incarcerated for 19 years, as possibility of getting a pardon. Dion Sarash, brother who brought this up firstly, along with Paula D. Marta Mastroianni, also helped set up the website for them, and or the page for them on social media, and we're going to hope to revisit that and see where things are going along with that. In the meantime, our guest, our colleague now, Fred Whitted, author of the Black College Sports Encyclopedia, and Fred, I didn't mean to interrupt you there in mid-stride, but please go right on ahead and refocus.
I see where we was. Well, again, the big thing for us is to tell our story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether it's on a show like this, in books. We have the wherewithal to do a lot of things if we come together and do them. We have all kind of technical skills now. We have all kind of technical equipment now. So when you see what Tyler Perry is able to do, he's proved that it can be done. It doesn't have to be on that scale. And it doesn't matter whether you tell the story in, say, a two-hour, I think Black Magic turned out to be, what, 4 hours total?
Something like that.
And you're right. There's, you know, there's a lot of things that was left on the cutting floor because they had 100-plus hours of film. You know, and I remember him telling Dan was telling me a story about, because something I said after we had wrapped up the shoot where, because I was supposed to do like 20 minutes, I think, and I think we shot over an hour. But then I think my niece told me that I'm on screen with my face a couple of minutes, and then, you know, that was where I made the comment about, you know, it became like a ripple in a pond.
Yep.
And that has become my, almost like my logo now for how you teach Black history and how you spread Black history. You got to start somewhere, and you do like a ripple in a pond. You spread and continue to spread until you get it where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look around, you see ESPN, because people say, well, what happened when Winston-Salem State dropped back to Division II? Well, in a lot of ways, they're doing better, but they disappear. Because ESPN and most other carriers outside of your local area don't talk about Division II schools.
Good point.
My home newspaper, we have a Division II school here in town. Well, they do carry the score, usually do a story, especially if it's local. They carry a story on Fayetteville State, that kind of thing. But beyond that, there's not much out there.
Yeah.
I've gone in old newspapers to look for stuff on Fayetteville State, and it's lacking because they didn't really cover Fayetteville State before 1950.
Okay.
They didn't cover the local high school before 1950. So where do you find that? Well, you got to go back to some papers you probably never heard of, like the Afro-American. You got to go find the copies of the Norfolk Journal and Guide, because to be in Norfolk, Fayetteville was very well covered by the Norfolk paper. I found gobs of information about Fayetteville State, Winston, you name it, from the Norfolk Journal and Guide.
Yeah.
Which led me to, you know, two of the focuses of this current sports encyclopedia are on the Black newspapers. I didn't get a lot on the radio stations per se, but I did get a lot about some of the broadcasters, because one of them I knew personally, because when I first went to Winston-Salem, we had Mr. Williams, and, you know, he was like, I think his show was called Daddy-O on the Patio.
Okay.
But he was also, not only was he a DJ and did all those kind of good things, but we used to listen to him every day on the yard, but at the same time, you know, he was the first Black, he was the first to put Black college sports on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And developed his own show. I talk about Muta Evans, who owned a radio station in Winston-Salem, who also put Winston-Salem State on the radio. I think the first year she was actually the general manager at the station, but eventually she became the first woman to own a radio station, and I talk about her.
Okay.
I talk about the various one, you know, and I was blessed to have him as the speaker at my graduation, Dr. Frank Bannister, one of the early black broadcasters. There's a lot of them. Then, you know, get into the sports writers. You know, if you know anything about the NFL, Bill Nunn Jr. and Lloyd Wells were two of the people who, yes, they were journalists, but they were also two of the people who built several of the first 10 Super Bowl champions. Wells built the Kansas City Chiefs. And Nunn built the Bill Nunn Jr. built the Pittsburgh Steelers, who just happened to be my team with six Super Bowl rings.
How don't you start? Oh, Lord, no. but you're right. One of the most striking images of when Kansas City beat Minnesota in Super Bowl IV was looking at that roster and seeing all of those brothers from those schools. Buchanan, Willie Mitchell. I mean, we can go all along. At least 13 of them, if I remember right. Brothers
and not just, yeah, but not just that. You know, you think about it. You had a guy, Jim Kearney, I think was his name, from
safety.
He was
I remember him, number 46.
He played quarterback at Prairie View, and the guys on the field would say he throws better than Dawson. But even as liberal as the coach was at Kansas City, he wasn't about to put this Negro out there who could run that fast. He wasn't about to put that Negro out there as a quarterback.
Same with Aldridge Dickey in Oakland at the time.
But see, even there, the guy he threw to was the guy who was catching passes for Glenn Dawson, a guy named Otis Taylor.
Yep, and Otis,
That's right.
So, you know, these are kind of things that, you know, when then you just look at how things played out. The first guy to win, the first guy to be a black coach in the NFL turned out to be a guy from a who by that time his school had even dropped their football program. And, you know, I can't say his name because he was an Oakland Raider, and I'm a Steeler, so I have standards. But you know, Shell was a good coach. He just couldn't. He just didn't shoot Al Davis, and Al Davis kept doing what Al Davis, you know, has been
known
to do. Now you look. You got another black coach up there from Alcorn of all places, down in Mississippi. But then you've had several, and the first black coach to win an NBA champion as a regular coach turned out to be from a black school. And, you know, and I had to show somebody not too long ago. They were talking about they had seen Black Magic, and they were talking about, well, whatever happened to Khalil Hill do for Winston-Salem? And I told them a story behind that. And they told me no. So I'd go and get this book on the NBA and show them that Bill Russell was drafted by the St. Louis Hawks. And he got the same treatment.
That's right.
Bob Pettit say ain't playing with no nigga.
That's right.
Bill
Not
Russell
just Bob Pettit. It was Bob Pettit, Clyde LaVellet, and Cliff Hagan. They were the ringleaders behind that.
But see, they were the ones who got traded to St. Louis and for Bill Russell. And see, they remember these guys were enemies in college because one Pettit went to LSU. And the other two went to, I think both of the other two went to Kentucky. I know one
That's
of them.
That's right.
Did.
Cliff Hagan definitely went to Kentucky. Yeah, they were Kentucky.
And so all of a sudden, you know, they go from being enemies based on race on school, then based on race, they became friends. And I said, what was the good thing about that? Well, Bill Russell got 10 NBA titles.
11.
They got one. But they got each other. And you know, in a couple of those, several of those times, who did they beat to get their ring? The Hawks. And I say no, and you know, and just all those kinds of things are out there, Mike. And you know yourself because you call me a historian, but we've talked before, and so I know you know some too. So we got to, you know, this is why we have to tell our story. It doesn't matter whether it's the arts.
That's right.
You know, You've seen from your reaction, I think you've seen Hidden Colors.
Yes,
well,
I have enjoyed it.
One of the things that they don't even address in Hidden Colors is the sports side of things, at least not to any depth.
No.
And we have all those rich sports stories, those great guys who took kids off the street, who took kids who were suspect students. You know, if you ever listen to Cleo Hill talk for a good 10 minutes, he'll tell you at some point, I was a basketball player who became a student and had about 2 or 3 weeks to do it because Mr. Gain said, if you don't get your act together in class,
mm-hmm.
I'm putting you off my team. And see, they don't talk about the fact that guys who play for Big House for 4 years, most of those guys graduated. Most
That's
of
right.
them graduated on time. Because, you know, Earl Monroe left the national championship, had to go to some place to take the national teaching exam because he had a game the day they had at school. He was out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was sent to the place where he could take his exam. And from there, he came back, you know, 4 years after he came to Winston-Salem State. He not only had a professional contract, he also had a degree.
There you go.
And see, those are the kind of things, you know, and we didn't have the resources even, and I came in several years, I think I came in 4 years after he graduated, so I can tell you for a fact, we didn't have the remedial resources, we didn't have all the tutors and all the other stuff
mm-hmm.
that you would have at a Carolina or a Duke and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you had coaches, you had teachers who would go tell your coach, I didn't see Mike in class today. Well, he
mm-hmm.
was. See, when I was at Winston, we only had 5 compulsory days to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
The rest, they left it up to you. Now, you had teachers who would say, now, you don't come to my class, you ain't passing. Because the things you got to know if you're playing to pass.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, athletes were held to a different standard. And we had coaches who, you know, you weren't in class today. You said, well, coach, I went and sat in your chair because you know you had a place to sit. You know, this is the kind of stuff that Bob, the people used to hold against Bobby Knight, but he would personally go check on you.
Yeah.
He didn't just leave to the coaches. And in spite of his insecurities, I have utmost respect because he won more national championships than Dean Smith, won more games
yep.
than Dean Smith, and with players that Dean Smith probably couldn't have won with.
True that.
And then we have the same situation. You know, for the longest time, everybody was calling Dave Robbins, you know, the first white shot in the CIAA or at a black school.
Mm-hmm.
He was 30-some years late.
Yep.
Because there was already a white shot in 1947 up at Lincoln University. There was also a Hispanic coach because Coach Rivero was a black Hispanic
mm-hmm.
at Lincoln University. And even before that, Lincoln had a white All-American. Nobody talks about that. Well, he didn't go to the pros. Well, the pros wasn't nothing in anyway.
There you go.
So, you know, the pros became, you know, really being, it wasn't until the 50s that the pros really reached a point where it was something of real significance. Because even guys I know who graduated in the 60s would tell you, I had a better contract going as a teacher and being able to go work during the summer and do other things to supplement my money.
Uh-huh.
And I could have made in the NBA, you know.
And to your point, they got paid longer and steadier.
Mm-hmm. And steadier. Because they didn't have to worry about turning no ankle.
Mm-hmm. Brother, this is fascinating stuff. I want you, please, get in the shameless plug for the project, if you will.
Well, we're in the process of completing the Black College Sports Encyclopedia. You can go to Black College, you can go to blackheritagereview.com. You can find the link to pre-purchase the Black College Sports Encyclopedia. There's also the link to the Rams House, which is a special edition of the Sports Encyclopedia that focuses on the Winston-Salem State sports heritage. And there's also a book there called Fayetteville Profiled in Black, which is the history of Fayetteville, the black community of Fayetteville, North Carolina. And that's at blackheritagereview.com.
Thank you, Brad.
Fred, I got to tell you, brother, you know, you are welcome here anytime. So, you know, there ain't no more standing invitations. You just jump on in when you want to get a chance. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's always fascinating stuff. And when you speak, you remind me of one of the first shows that I ever really watched on television. I don't know if you remember this, the GE College Bowl. Remember? And how it was a trivia contest between two schools. It was kind of a variation of Jeopardy, but two schools competed against each other. And just like in regular football game, I think it was in four segments, and the team who won got some sort of scholarship award or whatever it was. But the point was, the trivia and the information that was out there was kind of on the general tip, but I can see something like this being altered to fit the script, and Centric, BET, any of these other stations who want to profess they want to really do programming or whatnot, or to do it online on YouTube, the facilities and the apparatus is there now. Cyberspace is definitely the place, and I appreciate your diligence in putting this information out there. Again, feel free to call back anytime. Black Heritage Review is the site and the page, and thank you so much for giving me a couple of minutes of your time today.
Okay, we'll be in touch Monday.
Yes, sir.
And we'll talk about some things, but yeah, we can make this. Like I said, we can make this happen, and I honestly believe that we're the ones who're going to have to make it happen, because we've waited for other people and we know they won't do it. And like one of my professors told me one time, he says, "Fred, he says, son, you're the one who you've been looking for to do all this." So, you know, when you say somebody ought to do it, you somebody. So get it done. And so every so often I go back and thank him, because, I mean, this man made me write a paper when I was in school on justifying slavery. And I wanted to jump on his case. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to jump more than that, but at that time you didn't jump on teachers. But, you know, but I appreciate the time you give me. We'll be talking about this.
All right, man.
And anybody who want to get in touch with me can reach me at Black Heritage Review at yahoo.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Facebook. Nice pretty picture of me.
There you go. Black Heritage Review at yahoo.com. Fred, listen, have a great weekend, brother, and we will speak next week.
Okay, doke.
All righty.
Be blessed.
Yes, sir. You too. Fred with it, guys, from the Black College Sports Encyclopedia and Black Heritage Review. When we come back, we got to dip into where we started Wednesday regarding the tragedy and the true heroes who have come home after paying the ultimate sacrifice in Northern Africa, in the Middle East. Sultry Radio in the Raw. We'll be back.
Bye.
Yes, indeed. They are digging Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's from their very first album before they became big on Columbia. They recorded for Warner Brothers. That's from their very, very first album, titled the same name, Moment of Truth. And, yeah, we digging them. And if you're digging us, check us out, Soul Tree Radio. We have a page on Facebook, and there's emails there where you can also send us Facebook and also Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio, all one phrase, / Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. You can send us emails there. Bouquets, brickbats, all that other good stuff. Let a brother know. We'll keep it in mind. Also a programming note, on September 30th, we will once again come in with the September version of The Beggar's Banquet. It'll be about love, y'all. And seeing that it'll be fall and get a little cooler, that might be some perfect cozying up weather and atmosphere in which to do so. 2 hours at minimum dedicated to the cause of panty removal. Yes, indeed. Amen for the removal of the panties. But to more serious stuff, we need to come back and touch base on one of the subjects that we talked about on our Wednesday show. And also, as a programming note, Wednesdays, you can check us out 9 to 11 p.m. with myself and my colleague, Celestial OG Dynamite Walden Kelly, and my colleague, Sonic Cheryl Jones, where we will cut up what needs to be cut up and serve it up as food for thought, Wednesdays 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Now, again, back to where we started regarding former ambassador, rest his soul, Chris Stevens, and others who made the ultimate sacrifice in trying to make the U.S. and the American people as human as possible to those abroad, especially in hostile environments. The movie, of course, you know about now, that came out, this Sam Basile, whoever the hell he calls himself, the timing of when it came out, the insult that it presented to Muslims, and the dicey road that we walk when it comes to free speech and the codicil that comes with it, as in, just because you have the right to free speech doesn't give you the right to say fire in a crowded theater unless something is fucking burning. And I threw in case something is burning, because whoever did this movie, whatever they want to call themselves, I know their name was revealed, but whoever did this either as their own personal axe to grind or with the blessing of somebody else behind the scenes. We know as of right now, they have been itching for us to get in another war. Whether that war be in Iran or Syria, they frankly don't give a fuck. They just want some shit to go on somewhere, because it's going to justify not making any cuts to defense, even if the idea of defending has been changed now along with technology and the approach to defending or protecting people in ways aside from having folks just bop on into your country and say, all right, we're taking shit over, you know, back the fuck up. This effort that was made through this movie, and what I found really annoying as I saw footage of the supposed Sam Basile being let out. He had all these coats on and glasses and all this. I'm like, wait a minute, motherfucker. You knew exactly what the fuck you were doing. You had trotted him out, allowed him to wear all this shit so that he wouldn't be seen. But you better believe, just as with Salman Rushdie in the Satanic Verses, they will put fatwas out on him and everybody else who was connected with this movie. And that's why he was dressed in all this shit, and they allowed him to do that, because they realized they will take his ass the fuck out. Now, as being an artist, somebody who's performed professionally, somebody who writes professionally, I understand the free speech thing. I do. Hell, I utilize that on my show. But having said that, to temper that,
with some forethought and realize, okay, if I call somebody a motherfucker on this show, there's a reason why I'm calling them a motherfucker. It's not just for anger's sake or whatever. It's because the shit or the depth of what that person does has gotten to such a point that that is the response that emanates from me, because it belies the true profanity that they have inflicted upon people. And in that spirit, I go to what Romney has done as being the true profanity. He walks in there and literally put gasoline on he set fire to a pair of gasoline drawers, essentially, by doing what he did, because it only made it worse. He had no fucking clue. His people had no backup to say, wait a minute. Well, now I won't say backup. Backbone is a better way of putting it. They had no backbone to say, you know what? You need to let this play the fuck out and just see where it goes before you run your mouth. But he got his little chicken hawk ass up and continued to crow even after damage was already done. He's like, fuck this. I'm doing this. You know, Obama's weak. You know, and I'll say this because I can say it. And until someone apologizes, I will say it. Because Romney's thinking, that nigga, I'm not going to listen to anything he says. We're going to continue to shame him, because that's exactly what they have said about him. Until Rick Santorum is made to apologize for what he said, that's exactly how the first president, the man who's running our country and the first lady, are depicted. And if y'all don't like it, then you can see me. But the bottom line in all this is that that's exactly how he's being treated. We have treated the first family here in a manner that would say to somebody, oh, okay, well, look, we don't really have to go much farther. We can start some shit somewhere else. And we don't even care if Romney gets reelected or gets elected, because this has gone way above Romney now, if you guys think about it. Whether it was Carter or Bush, Clinton, doesn't matter what stripe of the political side they're on. The people behind the scenes want to keep that shit cranking. They want to keep the war machine cranking. They will. And whoever's the president truly would be powerless to stop them if they put their weight fully behind some sort of agenda, whether that agenda be for oil or for making more money via companies like Halliburton, who made billions here, trillions, and then walked away without paying shit in tax and reformed themselves, or whether it's private armies. And remember, along with the privatization of prisons, this concept of mercenaries, private armies, security forces, whatever the fuck you want to call them, it's a euphemism for we're going away from the government approach because we don't want to look at this as a governmental thing now. This is a global thing. And too many Americans are still in the mindset of being trapped on their own soil mentally and not thinking beyond Muncie, Indiana, or Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, or wherever the hell else in this country that they are, because they've got more pressing immediate problems where they are. They're in survival mode. We all are. So maybe it's too much mental energy to think beyond that. But you better believe now, we are in a place where this is beyond us, beyond our borders, beyond our flag. This is a global thing. And whoever's working this global tip, y'all need to be on top of it, because it's going to affect you, and in most cases, negatively. But they're not going to worry about whether you know or not know. These things that are being put out there, the psych warfare that's being inflicted upon us, is clear in the images of this guy walking out with all this disguised shit on, because he realizes, and maybe he even realized beforehand, that he was going to be sacrificed, or he sacrificed himself for a greater agenda. Because who knows, some of those fanatical brothers may find his ass. They may find some of the others. Who's to say? But the fact that they allowed this to happen at the time that they allowed it to happen is the thing I find most disturbing.
they knew that something was coming down the pike, and they looked to make sure that the president, who by every indication looked as if he was going to survive a struggling economy, which would have struggled even more so had he not gotten in, issues having to do with rights abuses regarding unions here, women's rights to choose, women's rights to have a say in how their bodies are looked at and how they are treated regarding things like invasive ultrasound and all of those things of that ilk. There is a laundry list of things that would take higher precedence on the priority scale, but now they're getting lost in the sauce because you pissed off people deliberately in order to, again, create a sidebar issue. Now, I don't even know if this will affect the election to such a point where it'll make it a landslide or it'll make Romney to some a more viable candidate. At this point, whoever's decided who they're going to pick, they've decided big time. That's done. So we're talking about a handful of folks in terms of overall percentage who need to be swayed if they get off their asses at all and go to the polls. We already know how much money has been thrown in. We can't even – to say gugobs would be even mildly trying to assess the amount because there's just too much. And that money is not trickling down. And I talked about that in a previous show. But wrap this around, if you will. If we know that hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on TV revenue for commercials and things of that ilk, and we know that that money could be better served elsewhere, and we also know that that money is staying within its own neighborhood, so to speak, because the TV stations get paid, so they'll pay their employees off of that. You know, some sites like maybe HuffPost and Politico will get paid because they're getting a little bit and they're getting the exposure from the TV and all that. So it's incestuous in that regard. They will feed off each other. They will pay each other. But that shit ain't going down to the folks who are supposed to get it. And this is a smack in the face, not just to the American people, but it exposes this whole concept of so-called job creators being able to do for the little people. No, they won't. Because if they can't do it at this level now, where you see untold millions, billions of dollars going everywhere else but staying at a certain level, how are they going to justify that if they get in? You know, what did they promise you guys? And I'm saying this to those who probably don't even give a fuck about Barack Obama. Whether you like him or hate him, or whether you're even going to vote for him. If you're not going to vote for him, how are you going to, in clear conscience, say to yourself, oh yeah, I'm going to vote for this guy, when he hasn't told you a fucking thing about what he would do and how he would do it? He's going to have a discussion with you. Well, you know, Bush had a couple of discussions too, Bush Jr., when he talked about gay marriage. So all y'all out there and wherever the fuck you were, voted him in, and then your sons and daughters started coming home in coffins, and it wasn't until then that you realized you got played because you voted against your best interests. And this is no way into disrespecting you, whoever you are out there, but that's the reality of the situation. This is scary. And we know these people will continue to do this, and they'll keep cranking no matter what we do here. We are making a concerted effort to make sure that people vote. However you vote, that's on you, but vote. But the efforts to try to squash that with time running out and the fact that these images coming from there, people losing their lives, it's all considered collateral damage. And unfortunately, there are other things that are going to come down the pike prior to Election Day that will also be of concern to some more than others. But as I say these things, these people who were responsible for this movie knew exactly what they were doing. Sad to say, it's never going to be no more or less than that. And until
something happens to one of these people or more of these people, you're never going to know the real truth about it. There'll be more tragic accidents coming down the pike because the big prize is still up for grabs on November 6th. We'll be back for our last segment and just some rapid fire action as we step into the downloads department and take out a couple of things for edification. Soul Tree Radio in the raw.
You had the better hold on. Hold on to what you
have collectively our right to vote, our right to assemble, our right or women's right to choose how she wants to deal with her body, the right for anyone to love whoever the hell they want to love, consenting adults, etc., whether it consummates into marriage or whatever the hell it is, all of those things. Hold on, because they will take them from you. Now, having said that, we're going to spin into the downloads for just a hot minute and talk about a couple of subjects that we've talked on previous shows about. Up in Buffalo, New York, my friend and colleague, Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba, has been at the vanguard in trying to get a stadium, a football or multi-use stadium, built in downtown Buffalo. For his beloved Buffalo Bills, and also to help serve the people in the county where he lives. He has made a valid argument that it is probably the largest freshwater area this side of the Great Lakes, and the logistics of everything provides a immense opportunity for Buffalonians to make max use of their facilities. Juxtapose that with gangster Ralph Wilson and him having his little stadium out in the hinterland in Orchard Park. Brother Freeman makes the argument, and a valid one, that the era of putting sports facilities out in the boonies because they were afraid of those nasty urban areas, the script has flipped, and now it's the other way around. You have to have all of that within easy access so that folks can get there, and also use it for other things, for conventions and other types of situations where the city, the county, the state would prosper. And he makes a very strong argument in a roughly half-hour video presentation. If you get the opportunity, if you happen to be on social media like YouTube, just check it out. You can type in Pat Freeman and the fight for a multi-use stadium in downtown Buffalo, or just the phrase video for supporting a multi-use stadium in downtown Buffalo. There's also a petition that he has out regarding same. So please, just give it a peek if you have the opportunity. You'll see that the argument makes a hell of a lot of sense, so much so that that's why they want to listen to the brother in the first place. Now, on the tip of what should be the time where, as football starts, you know there is this perfect storm in about a month where all the four food groups will be in effect. Baseball will likely be finishing up and heading toward the playoffs. The NFL will be in full effect big time. And CFL already is in effect because I like Canadian ball, so that's already in the mix. But you'll have basketball and hockey joining the fray, so much so that it'll be a glut of stuff on. But ironically, the National Hockey League is in the final moments of deciding whether or not they're going to start their season on time because the owners are looking to lock out the players. We've heard this script before. The NFL did it. David Stern was comparing notes with Roger Goodell, said that the NBA could do it. Major League Baseball, we know they've done it. And now, on the heels of Donald Fehr, former MLB union man, coming to run the NHL's union, now Gary Bettman, ex-NBA, who sat at the tip of David Stern, these two are now coming to blows. But the issue is not so much that they're going to go on strike. The issue is the union busting that goes with it. The split between the pie of players to management with the NHL is 57-43. Sound familiar? Similar ones regarding the NFL and also the NBA were also in effect. So in spite of the fact that when it seems as if the NHL has recovered from the effects of the first job action, where 2005 season was wiped out and the world found out about Texas Hold'em poker, you would have thought that, okay, we understand now the bread was taken away. You know, Canada will always have hockey in their blood, but the bottom line was a lot of people, they lost their steam. NHL lost its TV contract to ESPN, and now after NBC picks up Comcast and does an excellent job, not just taking advantage of the new waves of talent that have come into the National Hockey League, but playing all the Stanley Cup playoff games and getting a new wave of lay fans into the mix, comes the possibility that they're going to get locked out again, which brings the subject up of why be a fan? I mean, really, why be a fan if these people are not going to respect your entertainment dollar? Because that's really what this has come down to. We already know to buy tickets for sporting events, regardless of what sport now, They're paying a shitload of money. Money that could be going to pay a utility bill or put groceries on the table or anything else. But the love of what made some people fans, whether it's civic pride or whether it's traditional, you know, whether this is something that carries on from generations of fans being in the family, that respect is not reciprocal on the part of management, because it's not a question of not making money. They're making money. How much is enough? The owners want a bigger piece of the pie. The players want to keep things as is. Donald Fehr had a reputation as a fierce negotiator when he was in Major League Baseball, and now there's going to be another push-come-shove moment. Now, can this be avoided? Yeah, possibly. But having said that, why would any fan want to spend $200-something on a jersey, full-dressed, when the people who are producing the product don't really give a fuck about them? This is past marketing for the fans now. This is all corporate. And if those corporate cords strike you, then I say, okay, fine, spend your money. But respect is reciprocal. And if these people will not respect you, you need to show your lack of disrespect by keeping those dollars in your wallet. I'm just saying. We'll be back Wednesday with our Hump Day special edition. Myself and Celestial Wall and Kelly and Cheryl Jones. Good luck to my brother Gary Gray out there in Northern California. You better make that money, cuz. Knock them pins down. Go kick some ass. In the meantime, everyone else, have a great weekend. Go safe. Please go safe. I want you to go from A to B and back to A-OK. All right, wait a minute. You know what? Before I go, I got to say this. Because, and this is on a personal note, when you put your ass out there on the line and you say that you'll do anything, and I mean anything, to make something right or do something for someone, where I come from, my old neighborhood, your word is bond. You better mean it. I meant it. And I will always mean it. But when you don't have somebody there who can't put up when it's time to do so, then it's time to shut up and go. Then it's time to shut up and go away. So now that you've shut up, please, please go away. Y'all take care. We'll see you on Wednesday. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. We out.
wrapped your lips around me. So what do you think? Would you like me to please you again? Take you there.